Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, are you ready to do the show? Patrick? Patrick? Hey, Brad, where did Patrick go?
I don't know. He's a real nowhere man.
It's Wednesday. We are right in the middle of this Beatles countdown, right?
Getting exciting.
Mm-hmm. Probably the greatest Beatles countdown that's ever been done, I think. Don't
in
you
the
think?
History of the Beatles.
Yes.
Sure.
I'll go with that.
Maybe one of the weirder ones.
Yeah. I have no hesitation.
Yes, no doubt.
So the way we did this is we asked a select group of hardcore listeners to our show to tell us about their favorite Beatles songs, list them, maybe make some comments, what have you. And then we compiled it all into a master list based on the number of votes each song got.
Right.
We broke some ties and did all that. But other than that, it's pretty much all listener-driven, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And we have been counting down three songs a day all this week. So we are now at the number 9 song.
We're inside the top 10.
Number 9.
All right.
Number 9.
There you go. It's not that song. But good call. Good pull, as they say. All right, it's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Brad Mailer.
Brad's with us all this week, and let's just press play on the number 9 song.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me. Nothing's gonna change my world. Nothing's gonna change.
Across the Universe from the Let It Be album. I think this is the only one in our top 15. This has got to be the latest one.
I think probably.
In the top 15. Yeah.
It's not a song I know a tremendously lot about, although I'm familiar with it. It seems to have endured quite well. Like lots of people have covered it, and the melody is sweeping and gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a really great song. It's they ended up doing another version of it too, I think, that's a lot more pared down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in this version, you can really tell this is Let It Be, the album where they had Phil Spector involved. And it's definitely, you know, it's not a production that sort of we're used to. So there's that. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the song itself is just really, it's a great, great, great song. But the whole album, they basically shelved after their experience with Phil Spector.
Right.
And just, you know, they kind of just let it there. And then they, you know, went to work on Abbey Road.
Right, exactly.
And then decided, oh, we're going to break up. Well, why don't we release that other one too?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, I guess gives you a little insight into everything on this album. Like, you know, I guess they intended to basically pare down and kind of do just straight up rock and roll live tracking kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that, for the most part, is what's happening on that the rest of that album. But this one is a little bit more, I don't know, produced with Spector and whatnot.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
I love that psychedelic vision stuff.
Yeah.
I love him.
And I think that's why this song has, I think, endured and sort of grown in people's minds. It feels like when you're listening to it, whether it's true or not, that it's about something really deep and profound, right? And that you're listening to some great wisdom from somebody who has lived, you know? And that it's sort of bigger than all of us, right? And across the universe and all this stuff.
Yep.
The great, huge themes of life and meaning and all this kind of thing, even though you may not even be able to figure it out entirely. But I also think this has become a favorite because when you listen to it now with, you know, sort of the mindset of today, it sounds kind of indie rock.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It sounds a lot like a lot of bands sound today.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe why it's been covered so many times or been picked up by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Strangely contemporary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hear like Sufjan Stevens, for example.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's a great example.
And something like that.
I remember seeing Rufus Wainwright do a great version of it, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. With kind of his group.
It appeals, I think, to a lot of singers who, because it works as sort of a solo song or a song you can play, you know, just on guitar, but it doesn't sound singer-songwriter-y.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like something different than that. It feels more like a fully formed, like piece of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think Brad put it well, the end of that, of the Beatles career with all the different things they tried and, you know, the relationships breaking down. It's, you know, kind of a morass of things here and there. And this one seems to achieve something a little bit different from that.
It's a great pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did the listeners say? Did we get some comments on this?
Yeah, we have one here from Nick Scalera. He says, there are a few versions of this song, and I think he's right, Jim. I think this may be one of those Let It Be Naked ones where you can go and hear like a different, like a stripped-down version, like Brad was saying. I love them all, Nick says, despite the fact that the lyrics feel so hopelessly anchored in 60s peace and love optimism. So you kind of address that, yeah.
Yeah, that's not such a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think we could use a little of that these days.
Heck yeah.
Nick's too punk for...
Yeah.
That's right. Too punk for the 60s.
Nick, go listen to Helter Skelter. Okay, so we go to number 8?
Let's do it.
But of all these friends and lovers, there is no one who compares with you. And these memories lose their meaning when I think of love as something new. Though I know I'll never lose affection for people and things that went before, I know I'll often stop and think about them. Love you more.
In my life.
In my life.
In my life.
Brad, you have some thoughts on this?
I suppose I do, yeah. I do. I like it a lot. My favorite part is that solo right there at the end. George Martin plays it.
Yeah.
Is it
a harpsichord?
It's a harpsichord. They did it at half speed and sped it up or whatever. So it's definitely faster than he actually played it.
Yeah.
So, but it's awesome. And it's one of those, you know, contributions that Martin made that's, you know, so many things that sort of go unnoticed. But this is one that he definitely gets credited for, like, as, you know, I came in and played kind of thing, which is great.
Yeah. I think it's cool that George Martin had the ability to not only contribute to the composition, but be able to go over to the piano or the harpsichord and play it out instead of just saying, hey, there should be like a Baroque-ish solo here or something. He would actually go and do it.
Well, and he also had a background in classical music.
Absolutely.
Right? Yep. So it worked perfectly.
Yep.
And like you said, it's Baroque. It just fits really nicely in that song. In fact, I think elevates the song.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's sort of... I consider it, to a large extent, kind of a wedding band kind of song.
Yeah,
the way it's been sort of over the years, you would hear this. And it even, until that point in the song, it kind of performed that way, too.
Yeah,
you know, there's not much to it.
The drums are very sparse and stately with that little, sort of roll to them. Yeah.
It's just that, you know, a lot of the album beforehand, it seems like they're doing a little back and forth and they're kind of dissing on each other. And this one is a realization that no, Paul, you're actually, you know, I love you, man. You know, it's like it's kind of an about face from some of the, you know, Nowhere Man and, you know, other stuff that was going on.
Right. And certainly evocative of their hometown, right? You know, when you think about how they grew up in Liverpool and all of them and what that must have been like we were talking about earlier, in a pre-Beatles world, you know, it was a very different kind of, you were in a certain compartment. And I imagine because of England's class system, it was even more intense there before they came and blew the world apart. So
I also want to point out one thing really in this song's favor is these guys were like mid-20s at this point, right? So let me think here. So Paul was born in 42. This came out in 65, right? So what is that, 23?
That's math.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
they were all around that same age. John was a little bit older, right? So anyway,
yeah. But George is a little younger.
They were probably all under 25 or 25 or younger at this point. And I'm always really impressed with somebody that young writes a song sort of that really is about maturation or sort of like looking back at your life in some way, you know, it's where you're sort of old beyond your years or wise beyond your years. Yep. Right. And I think that's really impressive.
Yeah. That's a really good observation, Jim. I think it's interesting when you talk to people.
Were you thinking that way when you were 23, 24 years
Hell
old?
Hell no.
Right? Yeah.
I had different goals,
that's right.
Different reflections.
Right.
It's Very. Interesting when you talk or listen to people talk who lived through the Beatle mania period and, like Brad said, that whole Kennedy assassination. And, you know, there are a lot of people who really thought that somehow they had this power to foretell events and, like, you know, actually foretell what might happen in certain things. And they were seers, right? That they were kind of leading you to another way of living and another way of life. And that ability, I think, what you just talked about probably lent some weight to that kind of belief, you know, that they, at that young age, you know, they were your contemporary, yet they had the ability to reflect like somebody with all this wisdom.
I think both the Beatles and Bob Dylan knew they were in the catbird seat of a revolution going on in this world. And I don't know, it really comes off.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing because I think when you're at that age, and especially being a rock star, you sort of have this feeling of like invincibility, right? And to be writing about like sort of end of life kind of matters, things like that. I mean,
Strange. I mean,
The Who did, you know, "Hope I Die Before I Get Old" as a lyric, right? But that was sort of like snarky,
right?
You know, kind of thing, sort of my generation. And then I'm not sure how much of the Stones ever really reflected on anything.
I don't think that it stopped to reflect at all. No,
that's right.
Yeah.
So it really is pretty amazing that way. Here's what listener Mike Wagner had to say: an incredibly simple song. Incredibly sparse recording, stunning. I just don't know what to say, he writes. The song is just so beautiful and moving. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how most people think of the song, right? And why it has endured and as a favorite.
Certainly. And why you might choose it for your wedding song or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I wish For No One was in this list.
For No One.
Yeah, you want to mention that
for a second?
An absolutely
beautiful song.
I just wish it was in this list.
We talked about it a little bit off air, some of the songs that didn't make the cut that we really liked. And
it's such a beautiful song.
It really is. So that would be a Paul song off of the next album, off of Revolver.
Yeah.
And if you haven't heard For No One, go and check that out, people,
because
it's really, that cuts pretty deep.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to play out with the number 7 selection. Yep. Get to that in just a moment. It's also off of Rubber Soul, though.
Yeah.
We'll tease that.
Can I ask you a question?
And Brad says kind of a companion piece, maybe, to In My Life.
Interesting. I just want to make sure you guys, when we do this big epic countdown that we're doing, we're not going to get to number 1 and somehow it's going to be Stairway to Heaven, right? It's not going to happen.
It's always Stairway to Heaven.
I think
it always was.
Oh, man. You guessed the twist, the big twist ending.
It's always like the New Year countdown, the 100 greatest songs of all time on New Year's weekend, and then it would always be there. You were hoping it wasn't, but it always was.
Yeah, when they were like a radio station would
always,
do that kind of
always.
Marathon, the 500 like, greatest rock songs
time,
ever.
Yeah. Maybe this time they'll do something right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, maybe this time it'll be Ballroom Blitz.
Yeah, I don't know. Finally.
Yes, right.
Bang a Gong by T-Rex.
That's right. All right, so where are we going here? Oh, yeah, it's number 7. Mm-hmm. We'll get to number 7 in a moment. But please let us know your thoughts about your favorite Beatles songs or other things about the Beatles, or correct us on stuff we got wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Or tell us why we're not giving Paul McCartney enough credit
there
on this
go.
Countdown. We'll get to that in a little bit here. But, you know, this is all science, people.
This is all... Hands off, for the most part.
You know, we tried to do a hand recount.
That's right.
Didn't work. We sent it down to Florida. It didn't come back right. So
both Brad and I conceded somehow, which is weird.
That's right. All right, but tell us your thoughts. You can call 612-440-1984.
We'll
put your voice on a show, or you can email rock@suburbspod.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. You could do all that stuff. But the most important thing you should do, especially this holiday season when you're in the mood of giving people something, you know, nice and of value, and you're reflecting back on all the people who have been good to you, then you should give them the gift of rock in the suburbs just by telling them it exists.
That's right.
That's pretty much all it is. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do that. Share it with a friend. All right. Oh, and please rate and review the show on Apple.
Oh, podcast. That would help.
We're trying to, it's the march toward 100 ratings and we're at 94. Let's we need get a few
there.
More.
Mm-hmm.
Just a few. All right. So the number 7 song, according to listeners, is Nowhere Man.
Yeah.
What do you think about Nowhere Man?
I like it. I mean,
so it speaks to you. That's kind of how you consider yourself,
it
right?
It does.
Right?
Yeah. I think it's one of those songs that, that you can kind of identify with in phases of your life, you know, when certain things happen, emotions, you know, come and go. But
I just want to point out that in our Perfect Pop series that we do, this was selected by none other than Matthew Sweet.
Yes, it was.
It's a perfect pop song.
Mm-hmm.
He made two selections. He had this one and then he had the Raspberry song.
That's right.
Which you would think Matthew Sweet's going to pick a power pop song.
Yeah.
So I thought it was interesting that he picked Nowhere Man from the Beatles, being that it doesn't really sound like something that would connect with him,
not at all.
Style. This is a more, you know, more kind of stripped down song and kind of sparse, we mentioned, and doesn't have direct lyrics. You know, what is this about? Who is this guy? This Nowhere Man? But in a way, though, I think it speaks to sort of a universal truth that everybody kind of has these feelings sometimes that they're just ignored or that they're not making an impact or nobody cares or whatever, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one thing that leaps to mind about this song too is when I started getting more into the Beatles and listening to all them, you know, going back through a lot of these tracks, I was always fascinated by the various kinds of interesting ways they started songs. And this is one where I just never would have thought of, wow, you can start a song like this, you know, kind of with just dead straight into the harmony singing and begin it that way. It's really cool. I think just such an, they invented, along with many other things, the idea that you don't have to start by 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, or like a Sun Records kind of a, you know, an Elvis Presley kind of a start to a song, that you could do just anything you wanted and that could be the beginning.
That's a great example.
Yeah.
They have songs which start right with the chorus, like Help. They have songs with a fade in. Yeah, they do some really interesting things at the beginning of songs. So like you said, this one just boom, hits you right from the
it's amazing
first moment.
Yep.
Yeah, this is a great one. And it comes, for me, it's one of the ones that's most illustrative of what I think was going on between Paul and John when they're writing. Like, they really got into a back and forth there for a while in the middle of the period. And it's just one that really kind of stands out as one of those.
Interesting, because just to ask you about that a little bit more, Brad, and your insight on it, they at the time, they were not only producing albums, but they were also putting out singles, and it was a real competition between McCartney and Lennon to get the A side of a song, that must have fueled some of what you're talking about.
I think they truly do have fundamentally different personality types in a way that just sort of starts becoming apparent over the years. And, you know, and I think it's probably why there are Lennon people and there are McCartney people, you know, like as far as fan base goes. So I don't know. I just love it. I love the whole play they kind of go back and forth on, you know, so.
And drove each other obviously to incredible heights, I think, partially because of that. Yeah.
So let me read a couple of listener comments about Nowhere Man. Mike Wagner says, 2:30 of pure genius, the opening with the harmonized vocals, as you said, Patrick, the incredible sounding guitar from George, the ever expanding and meaningful lyrics, and those vocals. The Beatles were totally unique because they wrote the best songs and had the best vocals, and this song is that in spades. John with the amazing lead vocal and Paul with those high soaring backing vocals. I get chills at the end when Paul hits the high, making all his Nowhere plans for nobody. It's great. And then Nick says, and as I was saying about sort of the universality of the lyrics, Nick Scalera says, this one has never stopped speaking to me at every phase in my life. or even at different points during a single day. And then he says also, the guitar solo is so simple I can play it myself. Except for the harmonic at the end, I always miss that. And the backing vocals, he says, are so amazing. There have never been better la-la-las.
Yeah, that's well said.
All right, let's hit it. Come back tomorrow for more of the Beatles Countdown on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Brad Mailer.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like you and me? Nowhere man, please listen. You don't know what you're missing. Nowhere man, the world is at your command.
Refrigerator, order pizza, trash can.